Okay, this is Neil Monins with winerelease.com, and we're here at Fiddlehead Cellars interviewing Karen, the assistant winemaker. So today is Friday, May 12th. We're down here in beautiful Lompoc, California, and we're at the new tasting bar for Fiddlehead. So, and I'm here with Randall Dennis also, and Karen.
Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Randall. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
Thank you again for having us
here.
You're
so welcome.
Maybe start by telling us a little bit about yourself and what an assistant winemaker does.
Well, we don't call me the assistant around here. We call me the second fiddle. But, you know, the Fiddlehead is owned by Kathy Joseph, who's the owner, proprietor, winemaker, head grape herder, head fiddle. Kathy makes all decisions on growing grapes at our Fiddlesticks Vineyard and also on how we craft the wines here. And she also is a person who just absolutely loves to be out meeting her customers. So that's where she is right now. She's in Pennsylvania talking to people who buy and love Fiddlehead wine. And so I stay back here and get ready for bottling, and I top the wines, and I kind of take care of them while she's not here.
The least favorite job of all, bottling. Everybody hates bottling.
You know, I don't mind bottling. It's one of the second biggest decisions you have to make. Is the day you decide to bottle is one, and the first one is, of course, the day you decide to pick. So, you know, it's kind of scary because it's that moment in time when the wine is deemed ready to go into the bottle, and you just hope you're right. And they're tasting pretty delicious, so we're pretty confident that it's okay. But it is, logistically, it takes a lot. You have to make sure that not only is the wine ready, but there's bottles and capsules and labels and corks and bottling truck and people and...
With Kathy being in Pennsylvania, will she see distributors? Do you use distributors to get your wine out? Or does she sell direct to restaurants and bottle shops, or a combination of both?
She sells through distributors, but she will be visiting restaurants and wine shops herself. Because, you know, Kathy is Fiddlehead, and part of the energy and the effervescence, really, of the brand is all about Kathy. So... Once you meet her and she's out in the market, then they understand more about the wine.
You primarily produce Pinot Noir, and also you've got Sauvignon Blanc, and you've got some other new things this year?
We just do Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir. We make three different styles of Sauvignon, and we make those from the eastern part of this valley. So the San Ynez Valley is an east-west transverse valley, which makes it extremely fabulous for all sorts of things. So here on the western part where our vineyard is for Pinot Noir, Fiddlesticks, it's, as you can see, it's cold and foggy and kind of hard for people, but delightful for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and like cool weather Syrahs are good around here as well. Every mile you go east, you go up about a degree temperature, and you have a larger diurnal shift in temperature from day to night. So the far eastern part of the valley, particularly an area called Happy Canyon, gets much warmer during the day than it does here, and much cooler at night. So for Sauvignon, that gives us this beautifully ripe fruit, but yet with a lively acidity because of the cool temperature at night. And from there, we craft three different styles of Sauvignon. And this year, we made a late harvest Sauvignon as well, which is our new one called Sweetie. From our vineyard, we craft three different cuvées of Pinot Noir from Fiddlesticks Vineyard. And there are other colleagues in the wine industry who also make a Fiddlesticks designated wine, which we're very proud of their wines as well. And then we also make Pinot Noir from Oregon, which is, you know, sometimes puzzling to people, but it's just because it's just so different, and that is, you know, why we're all seduced by Pinot Noir.
And you own the grapes?
No, we contract farm that. So okay. Anytime you see a white label from Fiddlehead, It's a vineyard that we contract farm. We farm by the acre. We don't pay by the ton, so that we can ask the growers to farm it the way that we would like it farmed for our particular style of making wine. And it doesn't hurt them financially because we ask them to drop a lot of crop, pull off leaves. There's a lot of labor involved in it. So white labels are from vineyards that we contract farm, other than Pink Fiddle, which is our kind of little playful, flirty wine, which is from our vineyard. And the darker burgundy labels with the gold stamp are from our estate vineyard.
Okay.
But just Pinot and Sauvignon. The cool thing is that we can make three different kinds of Sauvignon. One is very crisp and zingy, called Gooseberry. One is very viscous and rich, called Honeysuckle. And then we have our crowd pleaser in the middle, called Happy Canyon. And then our late harvest Sauvignon, which is called Sweetie. We name everything here. And then we have three different Pinots from Fiddlesticks. 728, which is named after the vineyard because it's at mile marker 7.28 on Santa Rosa Road, and Pinot Noir being all about place. A bit of a barrel select program is called Lollapalooza, which is an English Victorian slang word that means the best of its kind. We have one very special bottling in those vintages that we were able to do it in called Doyle, which is a one-barrel bottling, which is a delightful wine, just amazing. And then we make either one or two from Oregon. We do sometimes a vineyard-designated wine from Oregon, and our main cuvée from Oregon is called Oldsville Reserve, which is also named after the place. It's on Oldsville Road where Kathy used to make the wine when she made it in Oregon.
Great.
Well, years ago, we met Kathy. We went to the winery itself. And we drove through the vineyards. She had me with the truck, put my side windows in. I think Bryn was driving 16, 17 years.
Was she driving? Oh,
yeah. She couldn't make
wine. No, she was in, Kathy was in the back of the truck with us drinking wine.
Her wine.
Tasting wine. Her wine while we drove through her vineyards. It was really a unique situation.
Yeah, laughing, I'm sure she was.
Is there still an active winery and tasting room up in Oregon?
No. With the 2003 vintage, we started bringing the grapes here. Regardless of what the varietal is or what the wine is or what the place is, we are always one of us on the tractor when we're picking to sort in the field. So we don't sort here anymore. We actually make sure that we sort at the place of picking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and shut it down in refrigerator trucks?
Well, yeah, so she'll go up, and it's usually about 2 or 3 weeks after we're finished, thank heavens, picking fiddlesticks, and then she'll fly up to Oregon and supervise the pick. Immediately goes into a refrigerated truck. And we pick into quarter-ton bins so that we don't have a lot of juicing, so there's not a lot of weight on the grapes, and then they come down here, and they're here the next morning.
And you've never run into a problem when they're both vineyards are ready at the same time?
No, don't even mention that.
The appellation here, Santa Rita Hills, it's my understanding that's a new appellation.
It is relatively new. I think it was 2001 when it was first submitted. You know, the Santa Ynez Valley is a large appellation that runs from Lompoc in through the eastern area of, you know, Santa Ynez Town, so the Happy Canyon area. And it goes from Santa Rosa Road up to almost Los Alamos. So it's very large. And because of the transverse nature of the valley, we have a huge diversity of microclimates and soils. I mean, here we have a lot of diatomaceous earth and limestone. And as you get closer in, you get, you know, loam and clay and sand. And they change all over the place. So the very neat thing about Santa Barbara County is that it's almost like a little country in its own. You can grow just about any kind of grape varietal in Santa Barbara County. You just have to make sure you put it in the right place because of this east-west nature of the valley and these different soils and microclimates, there's different little pockets all over the place. So I think originally with Santa Barbara County, there was things planted that shouldn't have been planted, and we're learning about that as we're getting much smarter about things. So here in the western part of the Santa Ynez Valley, because we are also part of the Santa Ynez Valley Appellation, is an area that starts it kind of encompasses around the Santa Ynez River. 246 is kind of one part of it, that's the north end of it, and Santa Rosa Road the other. And it starts not here in Lompoc, but a couple miles west of here at an elevation of 100 feet. It kind of wraps itself around the Santa Ynez River. And it's characterized by very cool temperatures, so it's a very cool climate appellation. It's foggy up until 11 o'clock about in the morning every day. Then we have a couple hours of a respite. You know, we have the sun come out and there's no wind. And then at 1 o'clock, almost like clockwork, the wind will come in. And it's not a howling wind, but it's this beautiful kind of little breeze that, you know, all this kind of fog has been hitting on the vines. And then it's like, you know, whatever the supreme being is came in and said, okay, now we need to dry these off. So this kind of maritime influence comes in. There's ruffling of all the leaves. It dries everything off. And the wind stays until about 4 o'clock, and then it goes. Absolutely perfect for Pinot Noir, which has a very thin skin and is very susceptible to differences in temperature. And, you know, it's a finicky little grape.
So sure.
It's a cool climate grape. The soils are beautiful. There's nice undulating hillsides everywhere. You get this kind of minerality from the sea that you can taste in it because of the maritime influence. It's just a perfect place for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay as well. And also, you know, other people grow their varietals here. There's some cold weather Syrah here, which is nice and spicy and delightful. And
many of the listeners that may not be familiar with California in general, almost every single mountain range in California runs north-south.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that the listeners understand that Santa Rita Hills, when you say that they run east-west, how truly unique that is.
It is. Well, because the foothills at the end of Happy Canyon do go north-south, but the Santa Rita Hills and the Purisima Hills are actually running on both sides of north and south, because we kind of flip around a little bit here, of the San Ynez River. And the valley is between the Purisima Hills and the Santa Rita Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is. It's very unique. It's the only place, I think, between here and Alaska where you get a valley that goes east and west.
Sure. And the ones that run north and south obviously block the wind from coming in off the ocean. But because here, geologically, the shift was different and they run east-west, that allows the channels for that wind to come through.
Exactly.
Some of the new experiments that you're working on, the Pink Fiddle and Sweetie.
Pink Fiddle, yeah. 04 was the first one. And, it's a really ridiculous thing to do with Pinot Noir. You can make a bottle of rosé of Pinot Noir, or you can make a bottle of Pinot. And rosé, we sell for $16 a bottle, and the Pinot Noir, we sell for $50 a bottle. So economically, stupid. But we make a lot of things here because we like them, and there's nothing better than sitting on a patio with barbecue on a hot summer day and having a glass of rosé. So we had a little fruit left over in 04 at the end of the vintage, and the decision was to give it a try. So we make it just like we make a white wine. We don't do a Seigneur experiment, anything like that. I mean, Seigneur is when you do a juice draw and you make a rosé from the juice draw for those people who are trying to do a little bit more extraction with their red wines. Or you can make it like you do a white wine, which is more expensive probably because it's not a byproduct. It's really made to be that wine. And you put those Pinot Noir clusters into the press and you press it until you get what you want.
Let's try some ourselves.
Yeah.
Touch also on the wine ghetto, I think that's a little misleading.
Yes, it's an affectionate term, not a derogatory term. Do you want to try Sauvignon, or do you want to go to the pinky?
Yes, let's go through.
So in Sauvignon, we make three different styles of Sauvignon. They're not vineyard designated, and there's really kind of no decision at the beginning of harvest as to which is going to be which. We look for Sauvignon that is just showy and fruity and totally Sauvignon for our gooseberry.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is put into stainless steel and it doesn't see a barrel ever. And it's cold fermented so that those aromatics are preserved in the wine. And then the rest of the wine we put into barrels, we barrel ferment it, some neutral barrels, some new barrels. And throughout the year we taste all the barrels and kind of decide which ones are the most honeyed and viscous and rich. And those are candidates for a wine we call honeysuckle, which is made more in a French style. It's designed to be an aged white wine. Kind of weird in this country because we all think that whites should be consumed early, but this is designed to be a white that is a Bordeaux style wine that is aged.
How many barrels do you experiment with? American versus French?
Oh, it's
Hungarian.
All French. Completely French. Okay. All French. We have to have that very tight grain. It's all from the center of France. Tight grain French oak, Allier.
You experiment with different producers?
Yeah, we use mostly Damy on the white wines. We also, have some other coopers. We try other ones every year. Damy is kind of one of our favorites when it comes to Sauvignon.
Okay.
So honeysuckle is kind of this rich, viscous, honeyed wine. Gooseberry is a lean, crisp, zingy wine. And what you're tasting right now is what we call our crowd pleaser in kind of a bell-shaped curve of Sauvignons. This is the one we make the most of. Probably about 1,600 cases of this. It's called Happy Canyon. And what you're tasting right now is 2003.
I do want to ask about the impact of the movie Sideways.
Because it was...
We remember 2 years ago. Lunch with you and Kathy prior to the movie coming out.
You guys were all excited about
her being excited about being featured in it long before, the movie came out. What's the post-impact of that?
Well, I have to tell you the story because, no one knew here whether or not they were going to be in the movie, whether they personally are going to be in the movie, whether the wine was going to be in the movie. And Kathy got to know Alexander quite well. They're going to write it into the movie. So that's why, Kathy's always excited, but that's why she was uber excited that day. And we went to, luckily in 04, we had an early harvest because of this heat wave we have in 04. So we were finished by the time that the movie was coming out. And Alexander invited all of us to the premiere of the film in Santa Barbara. he afterwards said he was afraid that because we were all so tired during harvest, we would all fall asleep. But so we all sat there on pins and needles, you know, whether or not the wine would be in the movie. And this taught me a great lesson, almost. Don't sit next to Kathy when this is going to happen. Because, you know, all of a sudden, the first time we went to the premiere in Santa Barbara, and they're getting to the whole thing, and all of a sudden, they, you know, the four couples go into the Los Olivos Cafe, and they're having dinner together the first time, and Miles comes and sits next down to Maya, and Maya, he says to her, what are you having? And she said, oh, it's a Fiddlehead Sauvignon Blanc. Kathy elbowed me so hard, I thought she broke my ribs. I was just like... and then they kept going on about how they knew the winemaker, and the clothes, and the wine, and the whole thing. So it... other than my broken ribs from the elbow, it had an immediate impact. I mean, the wine just started flying out the door. New York particularly was just hot on it. And it was Happy Canyon, the one that you're just enjoying right now is a previous vintage. But and then we were invited down to the L.A. premiere, which is entirely different, by the way, than the Santa Barbara premiere. We didn't know that when you go to a Hollywood premiere, you're supposed to just wear black. So, you know, we kind of came in from the country in our bright clothes and our curly hair, and we kind of felt a little out of place. But that's when she realized that as Jack and Miles are driving down Santa Rosa Road, the vineyard was in the movie. Well, I was sitting next to her again. So, you know, again, the enthusiastic stuff. So people in L.A. particularly, which are, you know, it's only 2 hours from here, realize that their wine country is in Santa Barbara. So as to San Francisco is Napa, so to LA is Santa Barbara, and there is a wine country here, because when you used to talk to anyone down there and they say, oh, I'm going up to wine country, they generally meant Napa Valley. The neat thing is, you know, obviously we would like people to know that we're here. We're all a bunch of kind of small maverick wineries here. There's had a huge impact on tourism here for the wine country as well. So all in all, it's been very good. There are, you know, we haven't had anybody like in the movie drinking out of the spit bucket or anything like that. So, I mean, it's been great for Pinot Noir worldwide. Pinot Noir also just went crazy because of the movie. And for us at Fiddlehead, it's not only a nice little touch of recognition, but it helped our sales as well. It was good. It was fun, too. I mean, the people that made the movie were all wonderful people. They came to visit quite often. We have pictures of Alexander Payne here punching down Pinot Noir. And I mean, there's rumors they're starting up sideways too, but...
I do think it's remarkable that there was this sleeping giant, this huge population base down in Los Angeles and Orange County that truly didn't realize there was a wine country in their backyard only 2 hours away, and that on any given weekend they can come and taste. They really were going maybe once a year to Napa or Sonoma, thinking that that was the only wine country. I'm truly personally blown away that they didn't realize this.
Well, Santa Barbara, because you say Santa Barbara, and, you know, that's, as we say, the other side of the hill. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they may get to Santa Barbara, but unless you knew you had to come over the hill, down, you know, over the San Marcos Pass or kind of up and then through Solvang, you probably wouldn't realize it. And they have Temecula down there near San Diego as well, but there aren't a lot of tourists that come up to wine country here. I mean, it certainly has increased since the movie, but I don't think there was the awareness of it. Part of the charm of the place is that it is not overcrowded, and there aren't a lot of tour buses and limos going from tasting room to tasting room to tasting room.
Can we try this honeysuckle?
Sure.
The wine club, does Fiddlehead, if an individual consumer is not able to find your wine in a restaurant or their local bottle shop, how do they find you? Where do they log on to become a wine member or get your wines?
Fiddleheadsellers.com is our website. We sell direct on that. We also have wine clubs where we ship out 3 times a year. Thank we you. Just did a really interesting wine club, I think. We sent our wine club members a 97 Pinot Noir from the Willamette and a 97 Sauvignon Blanc from San Ynez. I just find it's really interesting to be able to send a library release to your wine club.
97 was El Nino.
97 here was fabulous.
Yeah.
And it was a challenging year in Oregon, but the wine is just tasting. I mean, you wouldn't even know it was a 97. But we have 3 different levels of wine club. You get 2 bottles or more. We ship it 3 times a year. Some generally new stuff. This time we sent out a library shipment. And, you know, the cool thing about the Supreme Court decisions is that we're able now to ship direct to more and more states as we gain permits. So Honeysuckle is this wine where we age it in the bottle for about 3 years before it's released.
This is wonderful. It's very fruit forward. The minute you put it in your mouth, yeah. it's there. It's present.
It's got creaminess too.
Texturally, it's just it's rich, and I mean, it's an L1. This is our current release. So this is a wine that can hold up to a very rich meal where you want a white wine. And, you know, we have to kind of hand sell this wine. We don't make much, about 300 cases of it, because people aren't used to having an aged Sauvignon Blanc. But if you think about it, Sauvignon Blanc is the mother, DNA-wise, of Cabernet Sauvignon, of which we would never consider drinking early. So it certainly holds us. I mean, look at the color. You would never know it was an old wine. And it's just now coming into its own. If we released it any earlier, you would have, I think, too much of a barrel influence. Mm-hmm. So you've now got all that wonderful integration of the vanillins and the toast and the kind of nutty character almost of it just integrated into the wine. But you have to taste it, because if you just saw 01, most people wouldn't just kind of try it.
Do you and Kathy ever talk about future plans, and do they include different varietals, or will you continue to stick with just Sauvignon and Pinot?
Just Sauvignon and Pinot. Now, the cool thing is you can make them different ways. Well, you can with Sauvignon. I mean, it's going to kind of let you craft it in different ways. Pinot Noir, of course, is just going to do what it wants to do. You can kind of try to suggest to it that it do things, but that's about it. And, you know, we made Sweetie this year, which is a late harvest Sauvignon. So that's a little bit different.
I'm excited about trying that as well.
Yeah, it was a fun little experiment. And then Pink Fiddle, that was something that we could do with Pinot Noir. Screwtops is good for some things. Most of the time we wouldn't ever use one. We kind of like what happens with the aging through a cork finish. We put Pinky this year into a screwtop because it's kind of a visual reminder that the wine should be enjoyed this year. It's not any less expensive for us to put in a screw top as it is with a cork. It makes it easier to open and close, which is a good thing. It doesn't kind of have that romance when you open it up as a cork does. But it, you know, it's a good visual reminder that it is a wine that should be enjoyed in its youth. This is a classically made wine. It's completely dry. There is no residual sugar in it whatsoever, but it's very fruit forward. And it is a patio wine. It's designed to just be enjoyed on a hot day. It's a flirty little playful wine made in a serious way. We were talking earlier today, the way that we make it is, you know, we put it in the press and we start pressing. And then we have lunch and we sit down by the juice pan, and as the press is pressing the grapes and the juice is coming out, we periodically stick a glass under there and taste it and see if it's getting, you know, too tannic from what we prefer it to be. We look at the color, say, nope, not there yet, you know. Keep eating lunch, keep sticking our glass in there, and we kind of like a little bit of spiciness that we get from the stems. So that's why we do a whole cluster press on it. And then right before we bottle it, we add in a barrel of Pinot Noir to give it a little bit of a beautiful pink color that it is. In 04, we first introduced this. It was introduced Valentine's Day. We always introduce it in time for Valentine's Day. And in 04, it was sold out by St. Patrick's Day. So we kind of missed the whole summer market because it sold so quickly. So this year we made a little bit more, and hopefully we'll make it through the summer.
How do these vary in terms of website sales for e-commerce? There are certain wines that
there
sell
are,
more.
No, they're just kind of, they're seasonal. I mean, right now we have a gooseberry, which is another Sauvignon that we make that doesn't see a barrel. It's very crisp and kind of zingy. That's a beautiful wine as the warm weather arrives. Pink Fiddle is certainly a summer wine. We have a lot of sales from wine club and Fiddlehead customers have been buying wine for years, and it just kind of depends, I think, on their occasion. And sales on the website are good.
And in the area, in the Appalachian, in Santa Rita Hills, is there somebody else in the area that you personally enjoy or have respect for that's doing something unique in the area?
That's kind of the cool thing about working here in the wine ghetto, which, is, by the way, is an affectionate term, not a derogatory term. It's just, as you see, we're behind Home Depot. Two of us have little tasting rooms, Palmina and Fiddlehead. But there's about 26 different wine brands in this ghetto. Some of the best winemakers you can even imagine. Chris Curran is here. She's tremendously talented. You know, Bruno is now hanging out around here a lot now that he's left Sanford. Norm Yost from Flying Goat. Sashi is making delicious wines at Stoltman, and then, as we call him, the godfather of the ghetto, Rick Longoria, who has just always made tremendously delicious wines in a kind of such a low-key fashion. And everyone here owns their own equipment, has their own building. You're constantly seeing people walking around with wine glasses like, you know, what do you think about this? And if you have a problem, you can go ask somebody else. Or if your equipment breaks, you know, you go borrow somebody else's. So just here in this little enclave, there's just some amazing stuff going on.
One of our favorite experiences with that was a dinner we had with Kathy at the Hitching Post, which was the restaurant also featured, one of the restaurants also featured in the movie. So we ate there before it was popular, and we were struck that evening how many other winemakers in the area came up and started talking shop with her about, have you picked yet? When are you going to pick? It was right before harvest. It was just this amazing winemaker star-studded impromptu evening that developed. And it was interesting to see the camaraderie and how much information was being exchanged as opposed to protected. And they were really open about trying to help each other and what they were learning in their field and what they could impart to one another.
And here's an insider secret. Hitching Post on the Monday night, that's when you go.
You've just ruined it now.
Yeah, Monday night, Monday night is hamburger night. And
Hamburgers. Oh, okay.
So you can only get them in the bar, or there's a little kind of area off the bar, and you get, I think it's like all the leftover steaks ground up into hamburgers from the weekend. It's like, and these double fried fries. So, and it's $8. So all the local wine community goes on Monday night for burgers at Hitching Post, and that's when you kind of really get everybody together. And also, it's one of the only TVs in place, so Monday night football is supposed to get watched around here, too. So.
Yeah, I think they just got the telephone last year, right, in Lompoc.
I know. It is a wonderful place, and I'm sure Napa, Sonoma, and other wine regions are just as wonderful and probably have the same type of small community. Chris Curran, she has a Grenache Blanc I absolutely adore. There's some tremendously amazing things happening out of Happy Canyon with Bordeaux varietals, and there's a lot to be proven about Cabernet Sauvignon from the San Ynez Valley, but I think they're going to rock the world with what they're doing out there.
That's a great prediction. You heard it here first.
Exactly. They're just going to knock people over with what they're doing with Cab. There's some amazing, you know, Chardonnays. I particularly like Chardonnays myself. I know there's a kind of the anything but Chardonnay movement going on, but I love them. Foley makes some great ones. Morgan Clendenin is doing things with Viognier that are just heavenly, which is, you know, not to say her brand is cold heaven, but she's got three different styles of Viognier. She crafts in different ways, and she makes one that's, you know, part here, part France. So there's wonderful things being done by such a multitude of talent around here. It's really great to have an industry discount.
Speaking of that, can we have a little more taste of the 728?
Sure. So
the suspense is killing me. I'm ready to have Pinot.
Great. Well, I happen to have a little bottle of 01 open, which is really the first vintage from Fiddlesticks. Fiddlesticks is our vineyard. It's at mile marker 7.28 on Santa Rosa Road, which is why we call it the 728. It was planted, Kathy planted it in 96 through 98. And the first vintage, there was a little bit made in 2000, but 2001 was really the first vintage. There's six different clones and six different rootstocks out there. There's a multitude of different blocks. We sell most of the fruit.
Who do you sell to?
Half of the vineyard goes to Behringer for their TAZ label. They actually, they are partners with us in the vineyard.
Oh, really?
Although we manage it, farm it. And then half of our half we sell. So Hitching Post, Hartley Ostini Wines have a Fiddlesticks designated wine. Ampelos, Joe Davis from Arcadian. Jen Bonacorsi from Bonacorsi Wine Company crafts a wine from our vineyard. Ancien, which is a brand out of Napa. And he does kind of different Appalachian wines, and he's chosen our vineyard for his Santa Rita Hills. Summerland, Ortman Family Cellars, Drew.
Wow.
So there's about 9 or 10.
Where's Summerland?
Summerland is in Summerland. It's Ancien Terlinger is the winemaker.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we tried theirs at the Santa Barbara event last year. I think they were pouring there.
Yeah, he actually makes the wine at Central Coast Wine Services in Santa Maria.
Mm-hmm. Big co-op up there.
Yeah, we're actually having an event on June 12th, you should come down for it, called Fiddle Fest.
I was just reading about
that. Yeah. Well, that's
is the Center
Hills Wine and Fire, but that's Sunday.
This is, oh, that sounds amazing.
Wine and Fire, it's an event that the Santa Rita Hills Wine Growers Alliance is hosting. which begins on Friday evening at the La Purissima Mission with a screening of Rob Defoe's From Ground to Glass, which is a documentary that he did about winemaking. And on Saturday, we're all moving to Rancho La Viña, which is one of the kind of old ranches from the land grant days over on Santa Rosa Road. And there will be four tents. We're limited to 250 people. And there will be 24 winemakers who will be presenting their wines to this audience, followed by a really gourmet lunch. So it's going to be amazing. But the next day, we're having an event at the vineyard at Fiddlesticks called Fiddle Fest. Yeah. Fiddle Fest is going to feature all of those people who make wine from the vineyard. So there's 9 wineries who will be pouring Pinot Noir from Fiddlesticks. They are also going to bring a white or a pink of their choice. Hitching Post 2 is going to cater the event. We're going to have a bluegrass band out there. So it's going to be a great day.
Great.
To taste Fiddlesticks, taste place. So this is 01. This is really the first vintage commercially available from Fiddlesticks Vineyard. And it, as you can taste, it's still ascending. It's Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noirs tend to be of that cola, dark blackberry, blueberry, very highly structured. You have to kind of figure out how to manage the tannins because the berries are so tiny that you have a high skin to grape meat concept there. And this one is still on its ascendancy, needs to be decanted to give it some air. So that's 720, that's 01. And I'll let you taste 02, which is, you can just, the difference in vintage is just amazing. 02 is a low yielding year. Tended to be very giving as far as fruit. So this one tends to be a little more opulent on the palate than 01, which is a little, it still brews a little bit, you know. It's a beautiful year. And the neat thing is, you know, there is always a vintage difference, which makes wine so interesting. I mean, this one is. There's a little bit of that kind of nice caramelized toastiness to it, dark red dried cherries maybe. And it was, you know, it was a not a lot of wine in 02, but it's very opulent.
Tell me how you first met Kathy. How did your relationship and friendship with her begin?
You know, I worked in high tech for 20 years, and as my husband did as well. We lived in Redondo Beach. We used to come up here all the time. My husband is British, and he is into wines. He has been since he was 17 years old. I was pretty happy until I met him with a big bottle of Mondavi. But we started coming up here. One of the first wines he had ever had that was a California wine was from Firestone. So he read that they were right up here, up the road. So we came up all the time. And there was a place in Los Olivos called the Los Olivos Wine and Spirits Emporium. We came up for winemaker dinners all the time. And one harvest time, we were in Bob's tasting, and at that time, Kathy didn't have this winery here. She was making wine in a corner of Zaca Mesa. And she was living, I don't know, in a hotel or someplace. And her mail was going to the Emporium, so that she would go in there to pick up her mail. We didn't know her. We knew Fiddlehead just by reputation. We were there one day. She came to pick up her mail, and she had been making wine all day. She had on a pair of these rubber boots that you see winemakers wearing.
Straight Lucille Ball.
She was completely covered in crap. Her hair was just like... And she came, I mean, she kind of came in like this whirlwind, just like, I'm a Kathy Joseph, this is my wine. And, I mean, she just, I have to tell you, the energy level that Kathy has is draining for the rest of us. We're just like, okay, we've been going for 24 hours now, and she's still in this energy level. She just, so we're just like, wow. And so we started talking to her, started really tasting her wines. It must have been in 2000. And then we would run into her every once in a while. And I was working in Century City in L.A., in the tower, time of the dot-com bust, and we decided that we were going to shut down the company. Couldn't get any money, as our CEO said, couldn't get any money if I had a youth machine. So everybody's like lamenting. We're sitting there on the 23rd floor. What are you going to do? There's no jobs. I said, I'm just going to go to Santa Barbara and make wine. I'm going to go work harvest. Went home and said to my husband, what do you think about this idea? And he said, yeah, if you can get a job and find a place to stay, absolutely. I tried to get a job, and there was this kind of this funny, polite, how do we tell her no? And I ran into Kathy, and I said, so is there a problem with women making wine up here? And she said, no, not anywhere. You just have to figure out how to do things differently. She goes, you can't pick up a barrel like men can, and you can't move things around like then, but you just have to figure out how to do it differently. And it stuck with me. And I kept going, and finally I got a job for harvest, and I was supposed to go back in October and get a, you know, a real job. I just couldn't. So the kind of funny thing I say to people is I used to make money and now I make wine. It's a complete change in lifestyle, but it is such a delightful thing to be able to be involved with wine and the wine community. It's an organic thing where you're actually creating something. It's art and science, but there's an awful lot of art about it. And I saw that in Kathy, the passion as well as the art. And of course, she has a science background. So I knew there was a lot to learn from her, as well as be inspired by, you know, her energy, if nothing else. So I was working at Foley with Norm Yost, which was absolutely wonderful. We worked well together. We made some wonderful wines. He left Foley. I heard that Kathy's assistant winemaker was leaving. So I called Kathy and I said, I hear Helen's going to Spain, so I'd like to talk to you about her job. Kathy didn't really know how well the grapevine works around here because she hadn't told anybody that Helen was leaving. So I came up and talked to her, and that was, I think it was about this time 2 years ago. And I really wanted to work in the ghetto as well. So not only working with Kathy, but working here in the wine ghetto. And, you know, once you make Pinot Noir, of course, as we did at Foley, you're seduced by it. So I love Sauvignon Blanc. I love Pinot Noir. And, you know, so we're the fiddle chicks.
That's a wonderful story of chasing your heart and passion versus money.
So there's those Pinot Noir barrels every year when we taste through. We taste 4 times a year every barrel. There is just some that shout out at us and say, I'm just wonderful. And those are candidates for a blend we call Lollapalooza, which is an old Victorian slang word that means the best of its kind. Even though a barrel may be a Lollapalooza candidate, we have to make sure that by taking those barrels, we can't take away from 728. So we have to make a big blending decision as to which barrels are bottled separately as Lollapalooza and which ones we need to keep in 728 to keep the quality of 728. But this is a small bottling of a couple hundred cases, just the best of its kind. More structure, more complex. I decanted it before you arrived, but it will be even more delicious tomorrow. It's just one of those wines that can hang on for a couple days and still continue to open up and show off.
Thank you so much for allowing us to...
Sure.
Thank you again. We'll see you next year, too.